Monster Man, Episode 117, Necrophidius to Nilbog. Stop hitting the Monster Man, it was a bad plan, but I had to get the town on it. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are beginning the N chapter of The Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. So let's get started. Our first monster on today's list is the Necrophidius, also known as the Deathworm. This monster was created by Simon Tilbrook, and it appears in the Fiend Factory column in White Dwarf magazine. And like many of the monsters from the Fiend Factory, the version that appears in the Fiend Folio is slightly different from the original. So unlike the Necrophidius... Oh, well, let's go back to basics. The Necrophidius is basically a snake skeleton, but with the skull of a human, a fanged human skull. And, you know, it has a couple of different abilities. It can bite you and paralyze you. It's immune to all sorts of stuff. But its probably most distinctive thing is that it can do the Dance of Death, which is basically it sways like a cobra, with the result that people looking at it can be hypnotized. Now, the only two really major differences between the Necrophidius as it appears in the Fiend Factory and in the Fiend Folio. One is that the Necrophidius in the Fiend Folio is explicitly not an undead creature. So it says, despite a number of characteristics to the contrary, the Necrophidius is not a member of the undead class and cannot, for example, be turned by a cleric. It's a construct made out of bones. So a wizard, you know, sticks the skull of a cold-blooded murderer on the skeleton of a giant snake and creates a Necrophidius. So while it's all bony, it's actually an artificial being, not an undead. By contrast, the one in the Fiend Factory is explicitly undead. In fact, it's the first line of the entry. This fearsome addition to the ranks of the undead was first created by that most imaginative of experimenters, Karel Kahn, who was later to see the dark and build the temple of the archdemon Kong. And it goes into some detail about the process by which they're created. So that's the two things, right? The first is origin of this creature, presumably in Simon Tilbrook's campaign, and the other is the difference where it is undead. One of the interesting things is that the Fiend Factory often included these kind of editorial comments by Don Turnbull, and there he talks about this idea of it, you know, making the undead nasty in a way that isn't just draining levels, and suggests that basically you allow the hypnosis caused by the Dance of Death to last until it breaks eye contact with its target, which would make more than one of them dangerous, or like putting one amongst a group of regular skeletons really dangerous. But in the Fiend Folio, presumably, you know, between the Fiend Factory and Fiend Folio, the actual like rules for hypnotism had come out, and so it just says, you know, it works like hypnotism. Anyway, the Necrophidius is pretty cool. I think it's, you know, it's a striking visual image. It does have a miniature in the Fiend Factory line, I think. It's a fun concept. The one thing that I think is a bit off about it is that a human skull is actually way less menacing than a snake skull. Snake skulls look positively demonic. So I do feel like in most cases, most things look sillier if you put a human skull on them. Whereas a human skeleton with an animal skull on it looks creepy. The other way around doesn't really work. This kind of misses a trick there. Nothing wrong with just keeping the snake skull. Next up, we have the Needle Man. This was created by Trevor Graver, and it is also originally a Fiend Factory monster, and it is also, actually even more than the Necrophidius, different from its original appearance. In fact, it is the very first monster in the very first Fiend Factory installment. And the original says that this is not really undead, it's basically what happens if you mess up a raised dead spell on a corpse that's like surrounded by pine needles, which is a very specific thing to happen. So, I mean, I think that's probably why the explanation changed. It says this is not really a corpse at all, just a plant that looks a bit like a corpse. And in its final form, it's quite interesting. It attacks elves. It lives in the forests. You know, basically, it's a plant monster that has a humanoid form. And what it does is it's, you know, covered in needles, like pine needles, and it shoots them out. It shoots D6 needles a turn, each of which does D2 damage. So in theory, it might do 1 point of damage, assuming it hits, but it could conceivably do 12, which is quite a lot in those days. And it has some other interesting like mechanical elements. So, for example, it has very
it has weak AC, but quite a lot of hit points considering that. So you can see that it's really sort of this nuisance monster that kind of gets in amongst the party and is just spraying out these tiny damage attacks, but over and over again while they try to hack it to death. And it's especially vulnerable to magic, which is sort of an interesting thing. Turnbull speculates in the original that it's especially vulnerable to magic because it's the result of a spell gone wrong. Now, that aspect is left out in the Fiend Folio, but the rule remains. So it's a bit of a weird case where it has this weakness that there's just no reason to suppose. So you have to sort of know it or find out by trial and error, because presumably a wizard tried to cast a spell on it and find out that it's very vulnerable. Not really sure what that's all about. Anyway, the Needle Man is a pretty neat monster. It is slightly one of those monsters that sort of thrives on going, haha, you thought this was a zombie, but it's actually a Needle Man. You wasted another one of your turn on dead slots. Why is it always undead? Right? Why is there never, like, a creature that just kind of looks a bit like a demon, and you try to use your demon-y stuff against it? I guess because there isn't really demon-y stuff. I guess maybe people who put a lot of undead in their dungeons were getting fed up of them all getting turned, so they came up with ways to wear down the cleric's ability to turn undead. I genuinely don't know. I have no idea how turn undead works in First. I played an assassin. The Needle Man is pretty cool, but I think even Trevor Graver would agree that the star of today's episode is our final monster, the Nilbog. The Nilbog was created by Roger Musson, and it is also a creature from the Fiend Factory column. But the Nilbog entry in the Fiend Factory actually just provides a little more context for an explanation in the Fiend Folio that is somewhat garbled. So a Nilbog is an ordinary goblin, except, as the name implies, it's backward. So if you want to kill it, you cast Cure Wound spells on it. But if you hit it, it gets better, because it's going backward in time, right? So after you hit it is before you hit it, and of course before you hit it, it would have more hit points than after you hit it. This is explained in the Fiend Folio in a slightly awkward way. Here's what the Fiend Folio says. Many and varied accounts have been received about the nature of the space-time disturbances which take place in the presence of Nilbogs. Only one factor appears to be common. The adventurers will have no control over their own actions, and will generally pursue courses of action contrary to their normal intent. For example, they may feel an overwhelming compulsion to load their treasure into an empty treasure chest in the Nilbog lair and leave empty-handed. There are no saving throws against these effects, nor is there any known defense, although a powerful spell such as Wish will, if used properly, have a good chance of rendering local immunity against the effect. So that sounds like pure RPG poison. There is a no save, you lose control over your character, something that players do not enjoy, and you, like, give up your treasure and take some damage, probably. The Fiend Factory entry for the Nilbog suggests that basically what happens is, like, you come into a Nilbog lair, and they're these dead goblins lying on the ground. And you go in, you put your treasure in an empty treasure chest, the goblins spring up and, you know, run at your swords, and as they run onto the points of your swords, they seem to get better, and then you leave again. So the idea is that you just played through, like, this encounter with some goblins, but in reverse. Okay, that makes a lot of I don't know about makes a lot of sense, but it definitely makes more sense. What's described here seems to be that, like, oh yeah, when you're around a Nilbog, the DM just hijacks your character and uses their control over your character to hose you. Sounds like an excellent way to lose friends. Also, it sounds like a one-player game, right? I think the simplest way to, you know, the Nilbog is a puzzle monster to some extent. Like, the space-time distortion stops when the Nilbog is dead. And you have to kill it by doing things that would heal it. So that makes sense. Although, tough luck if your party's out of cure wounds, I guess. You know, maybe, you know, they mentioned knocking it down, sitting on its chest, and, you know, pouring healing potions down its throat to poison it. So I think the easiest thing to do is just, instead of, like, taking control over the player's characters, to just describe everything they do as happening backward. And let them figure out the puzzle where, you know, they would then describe the reverse of what they actually want to do, so that their character does what they want to do. That seems like a lot more fun than just kind of intention of, I mean, I think the reason that the Nilbog is a goblin, it actually says in the Fiend Factory article, like, yeah, there's no reason not for, like, Nilbogism not to happen to a troll. Trolls are bad enough already. So putting it on a goblin just makes it kind of an interesting nuisance rather than an unbeatable foe, which is what a troll with Nilbogism would be, right? So the intention of this, as I understand it, is that you have this weird encounter and it just like adds to the atmosphere, right? You go through, you have this thing, the Nilboglier, you give up your treasure, some goblins come back to life, and you're like, huh, time was reversed. How strange. But it's more fun if you get to participate in it. If you're like, oh, things are going backwards, so whatever I want to do, I should intend to do it backward, and then the real result will come out. That just seems like a lot more fun to me. So I think it only takes a very slight tweak to the proposed description of what the Nilbog does to make the Nilbog a little more enjoyable for players without actually really changing anything about it. So that's my read on the Nilbog. I think it is or has the potential to be a lot of fun, but I think that like because it's such a weird high-concept creature, it's kind of awkwardly explained in the Fiend Folio. And I think the Fiend Factory sheds a little more light on it, and you can kind of then go ahead and from that derive like a better way to execute the same fundamental idea. Okay, that is all the monsters we have for today. Please join me next time as we move on to discuss the Nonafel, the Norker, and the Nicodemon on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/Monster Man, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.